Welcome back to Money Mania, where we're talking tax season and what to do with that refund. If you really want your tax refund to have a positive impact, I'm bullish on Ohio's 529 plan. I always say, invest in something you love. Well, there's nothing we love more than our kids. So invest in their future and let your tax refund help. For as little as $25, you can get started today at collegeadvantage.com.
And this is, you know, my burden as a former Republican. It's my continued penance that I listen to these assholes and read them and follow them, because a lot of people really don't. You know, I think it's easy to kind of say, you know, to be in your media bubble in D.C. or New York and be like, what's the point of listening to Steve Bannon's podcast? Or this like Matt Walsh guy who's obsessed with trans people is like a joke. Like, who? If you go to the podcast rankings, if you go to the YouTube views, like Steven Crowder and Three-Shirted Bannon and Matt Walsh and Candace Owens, and these people are like up with you, Favs. Like, they're at the top of the list. Like, they're at the top of the charts. You're competing with them. Like, that's your competitive set.
I'm Jon Favreau. Welcome to Offline. Hey, everyone. My guest this week is Tim Miller, former Republican operative, current Never Trumper and contributor at The Bulwark, and author of Why We Did It, a travelogue from the Republican road to hell. So it appears the 2024 Republican primary has begun. Trump finally left Mar-a-Lago for New Hampshire and South Carolina. Ron DeSantis is identifying early state hires and picking more culture war fights. Nikki Haley is about to announce, and there are a bunch of other clowns trying to squeeze into the car. But the two frontrunners for now seem to be Trump and DeSantis. They're already taking shots at each other, trying to compete for the support of various MAGA media stars, internet trolls, shitposters, and grifters. The Daily Beast reported this week that Ron DeSantis has built out an army of right-wing influencers to promote his content. Meanwhile, Donald Trump invited the woman behind Libs of TikTok to dinner at Mar-a-Lago. Great stuff. So I wanted to talk about all this, especially the online aspect of the Republican primary, from how Trump's return to Facebook could impact the race to all the ways the 2024 digital strategy might evolve. And I figured Tim would be perfect for this. He's a former Republican strategist, having made stops on the McCain campaign, Jeb Bush's campaign, and the RNC. But since 2016, Tim has been one of the Republican Party's most outspoken critics, writing extensively and compellingly in The Bulwark and other places about all the ways the modern Republican Party has lost its mind. He also hosts Not My Party, an excellent Snapchat news series. We had a fun chat that I think you'll really enjoy, where we talk not just about the long primary ahead, but what's motivating the Republican base, the candidates, and some of the decisions in their campaigns. As always, if you have comments, questions, or episode ideas, please email us at offline@crooked.com, and please rate, review, and share the show. Here's Tim Miller. Tim Miller, welcome to Offline.
I'm the worst possible person to invite to this podcast. Is this going to be like some kind of, you know, here's what not
a
to
fellow
do.
Addict,
yeah,
with me.
Here's what kind of like a lecture. Is this going to be, you know, are you going to bring all my friends in? Is this like, you know, we need to have an intervention right now? And here comes your mom up on the next screen.
I'm saving the personal questions about your own online habits till the end of the episode.
Great.
Otherwise, we're going to get derailed. All right. So we like to talk about how the internet's breaking our brains here. I think there are few brains have been more broken than those of the trolls and shit posters and mouth breathers who populate the MAGA media universe. This is a motley crew that's going to help determine the next Republican nominee for president. You got, you know, their MAGA kings back for a third run. Some of them are swooning over Ron DeSantis. They're being courted by a bunch of other clowns who've deluded themselves into thinking they can win. So I figured, who better to guide us through this right-wing hellscape than our favorite former GOP operative turned Never Trump cuck? And I guess first question before we even get to the media conversation is, how strong or weak of a frontrunner do you think Donald Trump is right now?
I guess he's a weak frontrunner, but he's a frontrunner. I mean, I think that one way to look at it is that he's a stronger frontrunner than he was, you know, at this time in 2015, and he won that primary. So I think that certainly there's no doubt that he's weaker than he was 6 months ago. And I think that he made a lot of bad decisions, not maybe the same bad decisions that your listeners and like those of us in the reality community would think were his bad decisions, but like some other like things that have hurt him with the Republican base over the past 6 months. Particularly, actually, one of them is just kind of a boring practical thing, getting in unnecessarily involved in the midterm. Right. I mean, like he created this opening for Ron DeSantis, right, by endorsing all these losers, you know, and letting Ron DeSantis win and be like, hey, I'm a winner. He's a loser. Right. And had Trump just sat on his ass in Mar-a-Lago and like showed the Kim Jong-un love letters to cougars and like sent out truths and whatever, ate well done steaks and like kind of, you know, sat back, he probably would be stronger. So I think that has really weakened him. And I think that just generally, you know, we're just in a, we're in a different environment than we were in 2016, you know, as far as him not being the new blood anymore. All that said, he's got a clear base of support. He's got no real credible threats besides one guy, Ron DeSantis, who has not had to perform underneath the bright lights and, you know, is very grating, to say the least. So, you know, I mean, I it's not, I mean, I think that certainly he's in as strong of shape as some of the other front runners that we've had. You know, some of them lost. You might remember one, Hillary's probably in similar strong strength to Hillary, right? There was one person that could have beaten her, right? And he turned out to be very talented on the campaign trail, but had Barack Obama turned out to be, you know, somebody far less talented on the campaign trail. I won't trigger your listeners and name any names. Maybe, you know, she probably would have won that one, right? And then he's probably as strong as Hillary was the next time when she does end up winning against Bernie, right? So I think that, you know, sometimes you get tempted in the pundit space to be like, Trump's dying or Trump's unstoppable. And like, that's not really what's happening. He's a weak but clear front runner.
Yeah, the reason I think the Hillary comparison is somewhat apt here is because unlike 2015, he's like the most known figure in the country, maybe the planet at this point. And hard to find anyone who doesn't have an opinion of him, a strong opinion of him. So when you think that he's like getting, you know, around 30% of the Republican vote right now, or at least 30% of the Republican electorate seems like they're diehard Trump supporters. You wonder if that's close to hitting the ceiling.
Oh,
we're back like, to who's the changing their mind at this point?
Ross Douthat here. We're back to the ceiling conversation. I'm getting like PTSD from the 2016 campaign. This was our whole theory of the case. He had the ceiling. No, I don't think so. Look, if you listen to the focus groups we do at the Bork and that Sarah Longwell does, and if you just look at the polls and talk to Republicans, like the overwhelming majority, maybe it's 70, maybe it's 80, you know, maybe it's 85, right? You can pick the number. Like Donald Trump, right? And so the competition here is not among never Trumpers or people that hate him or have moved on. You know, that's a small minority within the party. The competition here is Trump has his base of people who really love him. Let's call that 30% for the sake of conversation. Then there's 60% that like him, but are like, I could be ready to move on. Maybe I'm tired of him. Maybe I'm tired of losing. Maybe I could find somebody I like better. And then there's 10% that dislike him, right? And so that 60 is really where this competition is going to be, you know, this primary is going to be, you know, focused on. And so I don't think he's got to, I mean, if Ron DeSantis bailed out and decide not to run, or he just doesn't wear well, as I've said, and Trump, and let's say he decides to drop out, he says, I'll do better if I run in 2028, and Trump ends up running against Mike Pence and Nikki Haley, and he's going to get 85% of the primary.
Yeah. So no,
I don't think that he's got a ceiling anywhere near 30. I'm sorry, John. I wish that was
true. No, I get. Well, let's talk about the 60% then, mm-hmm. because they're going to be making their decision, and one of the ways they're going to be making their decision is just to consume the information they get from their information environment, which is, you know, right-wing media. I don't know. I call it MAGA media, right-wing media. What do you call it now? It's not conservative media. I'm sure you wouldn't call it that. Do you have a name?
MAGA.
MAGA media universe?
Yeah, multiverse. Okay. I say ecosystem, but, you know, multiverses are in now, so.
What's your take on the MAGA media primary so far? Like, who's sticking with Trump? Who's Ron curious? Who's undecided? How much does any of this matter? I assume it matters quite a bit.
It matters a ton. And this is, you know, my burden as a former Republican. It's my continued penance that I feel like I have to give back, that I listen to these assholes and read them and follow them. Because a lot of people really don't. You know, I think it's easy to kind of say, you know, to be in your media bubble in DC or New York and be like, I don't know, what's the point of listening to Steve Bannon's podcast? Or this like Matt Walsh guy who's obsessed with trans people is like a joke. Like who, if you go to the podcast rankings, if you go to the YouTube views, like Steven Crowder and Three Shirted Bannon and Matt Walsh and Candace Owens, and these people are like up with you, Favs. Like they're at the top of the list. Like they're at the top of the charts. You're competing with them. Like that's your competitive set, okay, yeah. As far as ratings are concerned. So, you know, the other stuff, and then obviously Primetime Fox, which includes The Five now, which is you know, probably, I guess, is it the most
best show on television?
Well, certainly the most popular. I heard an interesting theory that The Five gets the best ratings, actually, because a certain demographic of Fox viewers falls asleep after The Five is over. I don't know if that's true or not. I think maybe it's just the dynamism of the panel. But so, like, this all really matters, right? And so if you're the only consuming of conservative MAGA, whatever media you get is, like, these clips of Fox on Twitter, like, okay, well, that's somewhat representative, but there's this whole other universe that's kind of blind to people. And that's on Facebook. It's on all these alt-right social media apps. You know, it's on YouTube and podcasting. It's on TikTok. And I think that it's extremely important. And the most interesting thing about, as it relates to that 60%, is most of those people are at least DeSantis curious. Like DeSantis has locked down and this is what makes him, I think, stronger than anybody in 2016, just as a single person, is that like the National Review, which doesn't matter at all, that represents about 4% of the Republican primary base, but like they're running a Ron DeSantis fanzine, right? Like that is like a group of people that like ranges from active never Trumpers to like Trump maybe to I really, really hate Trump, but I have to vote for him anyway because the libs are mean, right? Like, so that kind of world. They love Ron DeSantis, okay? And like are lecturing people who don't want to support him. But then you take it all the way up to your Candace Owens, is you know, what's happening in the Daily Wire, what's happening in, we'll get into this, you know, on these big like Twitter personalities and social media personalities, MAGA social media personalities, all of them like DeSantis. It's really this tiny sliver of, you know, ultra super MAGA like Steve Bannon world that is hostile to DeSantis. So, I mean, he covers most of the ground, about 90% of the ground. And in 16, it was much more divided, right? Like nobody had that broad of support within the conservative media universe.
So then it sounds like of the biggest personalities in this world, you got Bannon who's sticking with Trump. Feels like Hannity's still pretty much on in Trump's corner. Are there any other like still hardcore big name Republican media personalities who are like squarely with Trump again?
Oh boy, I have to pull up the great Olivia Nuzzi profile of who showed up to the announcement.
The Mar-a-Lago, you know, the announcement.
Brickman, I can't get Brickman out of my head. Brickman was there.
Who's Brickman?
The man that wears the brick suit, the wall suit. The man that wears the wall suit. He's sticking.
Oh, because it's the wall. It's the wall.
Yeah, it's the wall. Build the wall. It's bricks. Yeah, it's a suit of bricks.
Yeah.
Brickman was there. I mean, squarely in Trump's corner, you know, like that. I think that's the point. Like, not really. I guess I'm sure as we go along, I'm like one person might come to mind, but like for the most part, I mean, like he's got, you know, American greatness are the, you know, your cat turds of the world, right? Like there are some right. Like Donald Trump.
Cat turd very firmly in the Donald Trump.
Yeah,
Elon
cat
Musk
turd
camp.
Too. So then you've got, I don't know what happened to cat turd one, but then you've got like are the Donald, right? So there's some like pure Donald Trump fans, but of like your big personalities that I'm talking about, like, no, not really. I mean, some of them are very much playing both sides, right? So I went to the TPUSA thing, which I suffered through in Arizona, and all of those people were both, and were, you know, Charlie Kirk, you know, your Matt, oh, the whole Daily Wire extended universe, Benny Johnson, right? Like when at that function, you know, everybody on stage was just doing the, oh, we love them both so much, they're so great. So it's not as if, you know, once you get into kind of real MAGA world, they're like pro DeSantis, anti Trump, but Trump doesn't have a lock on these people at all.
So there have been some rumors and reporting that the Murdochs are done with Trump and might throw their empire behind DeSantis. Do you buy that? Or are they just sort of, you know, if the voters follow Trump, will they just sort of fall back in line?
I mean, I think we'll know based on how much Trump is on Fox, right? You know, I think they'll try to, like, I don't think that, look, I don't think the Murdochs, you know, Tucker, we've all watched Succession. You know, Tucker is the power player there, not Lachlan. You know, Lachlan doesn't tell Tucker what to say, right? So, yeah. You know, and I think that there's like a lack of control over some of their biggest personalities to the point that it doesn't really matter what the Murdochs' opinion is. But is Trump, like Fox and Friends, you know, how friendly does Fox and Friends get towards DeSantis? This is another, it's a good answer to your question. I knew more would come to me. So there's that right-wing TV universe to the right of Fox. They're all very pro-Trump. Now, maybe not every personality, right? But your OANs, your Newsmax, your Real America's Voice. Don't sleep on Real America's Voice, John. I spend a lot of time.
I think that's the first time I've heard that. I don't even know what Real America's Voice is.
They're big, yeah. They stream all 3 hours of Bannon's podcast, the video, or maybe it's 4 hours now. So that's their anchor.
For people who don't want to just listen to Bannon, but they need to see him.
Yeah, you know, they need to see like what the latest deterioration is of his skin and like how yellowed it has gotten.
How many polo shirts he's wearing? What are the layers? Yeah, no, I understand.
Yeah, Charlie Kirk's got a show on that. Looks like Ted Nugent does. I just pulled it up here. Yeah, there's, you know, some other guy, Steve Gruber, the guy, and then there's a guy on Newsmax that was the New York. But Greg Kelly, you know, he's going to be pretty staunchly in Trump's camp. So that crowd is. But no, I think that, no, Fox is going to be pretty DeSantis friendly. But again, Fox has shown time and time again that they're going to go where their people go, right? And so the question kind of remains, right? Like, let's say Trump dominates DeSantis coming out here and the shine wears off. I don't really expect that, but if that happened, Fox will be right back in Trump's camp in no time, right? Fox wasn't pro-Trump at the beginning of 2016. Famously, you know, for anybody who wasn't old enough to have lived through it and have my lines from it, the very first debate was Fox, and that was Megyn Kelly. You know, the very first question of the very first debate to Trump was like, Megyn Kelly asking about all his sexist comments and Trump's, you know, saying that she was bleeding out of her wherever, right? That was debate one. Yeah. Like, they thought that was, like, that was kind of a Fox top down, like, we're going to try to hit this guy, and he crushed them. So, you know, we've kind of been down this road before with the Murdochs.
Chapter one, Wayfair welcomes you to the neighborhood. Our hero, Titus Burgess, ambled down the stylish street of an enchanting utopia. A woman waved from a chic lounger. "Welcome to the neighborhood," she said, "where Wayfair helps everyone create a home they love." Titus stared in awe. Bohemian Boulevard, Trendsetter Terrace, Mid-Century Circle.
Titus, you're reading the Wayfair catalog.
Oh, you'll love chapter two. Wayfair's fast and free shipping saves the potluck.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Feel like you got enough to do already? I do. That's why I use Shipt same day delivery to keep up with my busy life. They know the snacks I like down to the extra creamy in my peanut butter. I can get deliveries at home, on set, or even when I'm away on vacay. And my personal shopper, Amber, she's got my back. As in, she asks them to check the back if it's not on the shelf. Shipt, delight in every delivery. Learn more at shipt.com/hi.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
So you ask people, you know, who are the most influential players in the MAGA media universe? People would probably go right to Fox in primetime, talk about Tucker, talk about those characters. Who are some of the, like, biggest names in the MAGA media universe who have a lot of juice with the base that people in the reality-based community who might not listen to this all the time wouldn't necessarily know? Like, if you want to reach the biggest audience of Republican primary voters that's not just on Fox, like, who are you talking to besides the Fox primetime hosts?
Yeah, well, I mean, the obvious answers are people that folks will know. So I'll start with that before I start dropping any deep cuts on you. But Candace, you know, I mean, Candace, like, Candace's audience is insane. So when we do the MAGA focus groups and just sort of get a sense for what people are listening to and all that, and ask them, Candace is the number one thing that everybody says. And when we ask about 2024,
wow,
you know, if it's like, hey, if not Trump and not DeSantis, like what are some other names out there that you like? Candace gets brought up all the time. Even though
does Candace have a podcast or what? Where else is she? Is she on TV?
She's not on TV. It's her own brand media ecosystem. But yeah, no, yes, she has a hugely rated podcast. Maybe not as good as yours, but you know, pretty huge. I don't know how it compares your YouTube views. She's got huge YouTube numbers. She's across all of the social feeds, right? So like, and then she's in people's Facebook feeds. She's like multi-platform in that sense, and then does a lot of, you know, speaking and going on to the other, doing the other stuff. So no,
she's part of the Daily Wire extended universe.
She is part of the Daily Wire extended universe. And that's why, you know, when she was like going pro Kanye, when he was pro Nazi, like Ben and them didn't dump her. Right. I mean, yeah. You couldn't. But I mean, you know, I just pull and look, she's got 3.3 million on Twitter, similar on Instagram, and her YouTube numbers are huge. So Candace, I think, is number one. And then Ben, I guess the whole kind of then you'd get into the rest of the Daily Wire. But she is first among with no equal as far as hearing what these people listen to. And then it's, I hate to keep giving the guy credit, but then it's like the Bannon podcast world, you know, that podcast is a top 10 podcast, but it is airing on this show. Its live streams get big numbers. Like Bannon, unfortunately, I had to spend time with him, as people might know, when I did the circus thing. Like he gets recognized, right? Like a little celebrity, yeah, in that world, you know. So, and that's why the RNC chairs race basically took pace on his podcast, right? I mean, it was like he had to have Harmeet on, and then he had Rana on, which is crazy. And he's been indicted multiple times, and like it was, you know, pro January 6th. It's like they learned nothing from the midterms, but for sure that's a big one. I mean, I think that you kind of now then get to a bit of a fracturing after that, but I think that there is another kind of group of folks that now, Crowder, I should have mentioned Crowder too. And Crowder's making $500 million apparently. So he's doing pretty well.
I know I promised that if you came on, I would not make you talk about the Stephen Crowder, Ben Shapiro Daily Wire fight.
No, you promised to not make me have to learn about the details of their contract dispute, which I like, that was my line. I will monitor what Stephen Crowder is doing and speaking about politically. I can't care about his contract dispute with the Daily Wire.
No, the only number that popped out at me from that I wanted to bring up to you is that he's got 300,000 people paying $99 a year subscription for him. That's why he's making that choice. 300,000 people are paying $100 a year for Steven Crowder? I've like heard that name a bunch of times, but I don't think I've ever heard Steven Crowder before.
You really haven't?
I mean, probably. A lot of them just look and sound the same. He's just like someone yelling into a microphone about something that they're aggrieved about. But yeah.
Oh, yeah,
I definitely heard the name, but I'm not too familiar with Stephen Crowder.
I go way back with old Steve, but okay, yeah, no, but he's big. He, I mean, and just 300,000 right there. I mean, that's all Republican primary voters. I mean, how many people are we really talking about in this universe that you're trying to get to? So that's a big one. We should have mentioned in the sticking with Trump camp, the Trump family has their own.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean. I mean, like Don Jr. is now a media personality of his own regard. That's pretty big. You've got your Tommies. You keep track of Tommy.
Yeah, of course.
Tommy,
of course. Tommy Lauren. Yeah,
it's important. Just one final thing at the Turning Point thing. There is now like this second tier, right? Which is like, okay, this isn't a one stop shop. If I'm trying to get famous, I can't go on with Diamond and Silk anymore. R.I.P. Diamond. But there are like middle level diamonds all over the place, right? Like this was like a big takeaway for me from going to the Turning Point thing. And I started following some of them just because I like to suffer, you know, and, you know, like just dudes, or a lot of times actually it's people of color, it's gays, right? Because, you know, you get a little extra juice for that, being like the gay that's like, I'm the gay for Trump, right? This gets Christian Walker, right? Christian Walker's kid, very famous. But, you know, there's like these little celebrities walking around. Like there's this whole celebrity ecosystem. I mean, I go down the escalator, you know, it's like going down the stairs to the gates of hell. And I got to tell you, you've never heard of Real America's Voice. I'm in this world and I try, and I'd never heard of some of these things. Like, there were like 9 different conservative streaming outlets. And then there are like these little TikTok influencers walking around, and people are, and they're getting recognized. Selfies are happening. And so, you know, I think that like underneath kind of the radar of everybody, you know, is this other ecosystem. And I do think that the Daily Beast story, you know, the DeSantis guys are doing a good job of kind of trying to penetrate that world too. And those, yeah, all those people matter way more in the Republican primary than like Rich Lowry.
Yeah, yeah, I know, yeah. Well, which is interesting, and because that media ecosystem is such a bubble and so closed off from the rest of America, I think the rest of America, particularly like the elites in D.C., political elites in D.C. and New York, especially in journalism and politics, they do think Rich Lowry gets invited onto the Meet the Press panel, and everyone thinks like Rich Lowry represents the Republican Party or whoever they have on. And meanwhile, there's just this like army of influencers and TikTok stars and podcast hosts that have a lot of juice in this primary.
Oh, yeah. And this is true of Republican like elites, even like more so, frankly, than Democratic elites, right? Because they don't want to, yeah, know, right, what's happening. You know, like they don't like because they have to live in their comfortable bubble where they're still voting for tax cuts. You know, it's like my pick. Every time I talk to a Republican, I'm like, I'm giving you homework. You're listening to 1 hour of the Charlie Kirk Show or the Steve Bannon podcast. Like, that is it. Like, I'm giving you homework, and you need to know what's actually happening out there, because it's a completely different conversation. I just pulled out the America Fest because I couldn't remember these people's names because they're all just generic. But like, it's like when the Coachella lineup comes out and you start to feel old because you're like, I've never heard of this. Like, Blackpink is the headliner. I've never heard of Blackpink. This is like this. It's like Brandon Tatum. It's like the number 3 headliner. I never heard of him. He's a black conservative. Like, I clicked on his, you know, one of his social accounts. It's like 1 million followers, right? I'm like, oh, okay. Well, no wonder he was headlining ahead of Madison Cawthorn, you know? So like there's another layer of like things like that that's happening out there.
So one of those sort of like new darlings of the right that's popped up in the last couple of years is Libs of TikTok creator Chaya Rychik. Trump and DeSantis have both been courting her. DeSantis, I guess, called her to offer her refuge from all the angry libs at the governor's mansion. She said she could stay there as long as she wants. She's getting attacked by the libs. And then Trump invited her to Mar-a-Lago, just took a picture with her. Can you explain to people why Libs of TikTok has become a thing?
It's your fault, mostly, John, for getting outraged by it. If you just ignored it.
We're the libs in the title.
Yeah, yeah. You're the libs. So let's see. How's the right way to... What undergirds all this is it's an like one of the central tenets of the MAGA ethos, right? Is one is that they are the ones that are being discriminated against, and they are the aggrieved, right? Okay, so that's one element of it. And the other one is that it's the libs that are the crazy ones, right? And I think they feel like, and I heard this a lot in the speeches, and this was like Tucker's most of his speech to this Turning Point conference I went to. And he's talking about how it didn't make any sense to him. He's like, I think how would any normal person vote for these people, right? Because they do this nut picking, right? Where they're like, okay, well, we might have, you know, George Santos, Anthony DeVold, or whatever his name is, and like the racist game show host is the president. We might all have all these lunatics in Congress, but look at this one teacher in Saginaw and what she said that was really strange. Like, she wore cat ears to class and like wants to, you know, says her pronouns are meow or whatever. Like, there's this one person, right? And so, oh man, they are the crazy ones, right? Not us. Like, we're normal. Yeah. Okay. We're the ones that are like, I just want to go by he, you know, like, I don't know what, right? Like, that's the whole shtick, right? And so they need a constant stream of examples to like prove to themselves, like, we're not the crazy ones, right? I promise. We're not the crazy ones. It's them that's crazy. And so LaChaya at the Libs of TikTok basically, you know, filled this need. She was the supplier. there was a lot of demand for crazy libs saying stuff, and she filled the supply side of the equation. And so, you know, the account is pretty gross, right? I mean, you know, like when it first came out, you'd see it And now everything is through the context of, I mean, it's directly targeting trans people mostly, but also, you know, broader LGBT folks and other marginalized folks. But when I didn't really realize who the person was behind it, you know, it pops into your feed and you can see how people get sucked into this. You're like, one, it's like, oh, this is kind of mean that she's doing this. And then one will come up and be like, oh, that's kind of funny. Like, it's harmless, right? Like, it's a video of somebody doing a TikTok where they're, you know, expressing their sexuality in a way that's a little quirky or fun or whatever. And it's like, you know, Ben Shapiro, like, there's only one segment he does that I find actually funny, because he's not funny at all, but they like his producers, which also speaks to this need to find extreme stuff, like find like a polyamorous quadruple, you know, that does like a little video about themselves, and like Ben just kind of reacts to the video and he's like, you guys are weird. And it's kind of like, ah, like, I don't want to laugh at Ben Shapiro, but like, it is kind of, you know. So she filled that void, right? Okay, but then it gets darker and darker, right? It goes, you know, as anything does when you're picking on people and being cruel to people. But like, she goes down this rabbit hole where it's really targeting people, and then she literally begins targeting people, you know, by posting things that's like, hey, there is this drag show that's happening at your library in San Antonio on Friday. Like, people should go, right? So she then becomes kind of like a digital organizer of these protests that obviously become violent in certain places. Colorado Springs wasn't a protest, but, you know, there have been violence targeting drag performers. So you know, it's gotten really dark. But like, I think that like the genesis of her popularity was like, you know, I think, you know, based on this insecurity of Republicans knowing how like their whole, all of their candidates for Senate were all freaks. And like, you need to balance this out by like finding crazy liberals to make yourself feel better about this. And that was kind of the genesis of her popularity. But then it's skyrocketed. And now, I mean, you know, she's like feeding Fox and all, you know, all these other folks with content.
I think that the funnel there, though, is important. You know, that like the sort of lighter hearted cruelty, right, where she just mocks people. That's how she gets sort of mainstreamed or platformed on, you know, like the Joe Rogans will pick that up, and other, you know, sort of more mainstream places will pick that up and everything. Oh, well, it's funny. That wasn't too harmful. And that's just a little quirky. And then, you know, the further you get into it, much like anything else on the internet, you go down and down the rabbit hole, and now they're having to clear out Mass General Hospital, right? Because she's, or whatever, I think it was Mass General or Children's Hospital there in Boston, that they thought libs of TikTok, like, sort of, you know, incentivized people to go call in bomb threats. Because of what she was posting.
Yeah, and the Joe Rogan thing, I don't know if Rogan has actually done this, but like, other thing, it's the shock jock thing, right? Other folks have done this, right? And that, you know, and so this is not to defend them, but you can kind of understand how they get like hooked into it, right? And then, so then you're promoting her, you know, she's getting like tons and tons and tons more views. And now, I mean, she's like, now she doesn't even need that, because she's this darling, and Trump uses all of his platforms and you know, his kids do. And so how important she is in like the primary setting, I don't know, right? I mean, so she's really influential in a lot of these ways that are very disturbing, you know, but she hasn't proven that she's like, she's not crossing over and like running a podcast and analyzing races, right, and making endorsements and all that sort of stuff. But I mean, obviously they feel important enough that she is being courted by both of the two leading contenders.
So, you know, you went to this Turning Point USA America Fest after the midterms. I know before that you're an avid listener of Steve Bannon's War Room podcast, like our friend Tommy. I know you listened to like a full week of it around insurrection anniversary last year. What's been bouncing around that echo chamber lately? Like, now that they've had a tough midterm, are they strategizing about how to actually beat the libs in the next election, or are they just content owning the libs?
Content owning. No. There is not. I mean, besides this sort of, like, there is this, like, DeSantis is a magic, you know, kind of fairy dust element to everything, right? Like, we don't really have to think about this because, you know, for the ones who believe that Trump lost, right? It's like, we don't have to really think about this that deeply because, look, he won by 20 in Florida, and we'll just use his magic fairy dust, and so we can just keep on doing our deal, and we don't have to actually reflect on why we lost all these races. And then the ones that don't believe that they lost all these races, like, that's, this is an important element. Carrie Lake, who lost in Arizona, held a rally on Sunday, this past Sunday, across from the AFC championship game. She is not currently a candidate for anything. She lost the governor's race. It is in the middle of a very prime sporting event. People were lined up around the block. This is not spin from her people. It was like there was a Democrat.
Really?
Yes, I had a friend that was there, and I was, and he was calling me. He's like, "Man, it was in my neighborhood. I went to this thing just kind of like check it out, just like see if there's a." This was like mostly, I think, for Schadenfreude purposes. You know, he was like, "I wanted to kind of like laugh," and he was like, "I wish I could have laughed. Like it was a full house. Now, how many people are there? 1,000 or whatever? I don't. Who knows? But like, still, they are, so, and that is all this alt reality. Like, oh, we didn't really." Lose, you know, the machines are out to get us things. So there's that element. The thing that is the most, the vaccines is the thing that continues, and this will be the most interesting thing about how DeSantis plays this and how Trump plays this. The vaccines are the hot button. There is the are you aware of the Damar Hamlin actually died and they are showing his body double? Yeah.
Yep.
That one is out there.
So that's
in
more of that.
Okay. So that one's in the more extreme. That's like in the Stu Peters universe. I didn't mention him anywhere, but Stu is like also a top.
I don't know who that is.
I think he's beating the Bulwark podcast. I don't know. We're competing with Stu. You're competing with, you know, Candace. We're competing with Stu down in the 20s. Like, I keep an eye on the ratings. So, like, this is not nothing. So that was Stu. He was pushing that, and I'm sure some other people. But just general, there was an MSNBC host that had a myocarditis weekend. MSNBC host. I don't know if you saw this. She had to take a couple of days off. She went on the show and said, "I had a little heart ruffle." It seemed like a real scare. Actually, it's pretty scary. But it has on the mend. Is back on TV. It's a weekend MSNBC host. And oh man, that video was going wild yesterday or Monday, whenever I was doing my rounds, like of them trying to dunk on her, make fun of her. Oh, she obviously got this from the vaccine, and she was a healthy person. Why did she even take this vaccine? So like all of that, like the COVID culture war stuff has not lost any steam.
See, that's so interesting to me. We talked about this on Tuesday's Pod Save America because, you know, Trump and DeSantis are now sort of sniping at each other over, you know, who was more anti-vaccine,
right?
Because the winner of that is the winner of the primary, right? That's a bizarro world. But I thought, like, you know what, is COVID politics still going to be relevant to Republican primary voters 2 years after this whole thing started? Like, it feels like picking a fight over an issue that is largely in the past, at least the political conflict over it being in the past, if not the actual disease itself. But I don't know. I mean, the Republican base is pretty crazy, so maybe it has salience for the next 2 years. I don't know.
That was my instinct as well. The TPUSA thing gave me like a little bit of a different vantage point. Because, you know, then, you know, just me and Tommy's like weekly Steve Bannon appointment. That is because I talked to like the attendees, right? And the thing that I asked everybody, I was just the first question, you know, after pleasantries, was like, what's getting you riled up right now? You know, like, what's the animating issue for you? And like, anti-woke, COVID, Ukraine. Not on the good side of Ukraine.
Wow.
You know, like that was it. And Ukraine was like Ukraine's like a distant third. It was really like anti-woke stuff, COVID, which I would encapsulate as like vaccine or still being mad about schools shutting down. And like those were the two things that came out of people's mouths. And like college Republicans, older folks that went there, that was completely consistent. The other thing from those conversations and from the speeches is I would be like, okay, well after the loss, like to your original question here, like what do you think they should be doing differently? And like there just wasn't, you know, like the answers to that were all very random, like one-off peccadilloes that they have. Oh, we should be better on the data. I mean, some people didn't believe that machines worked, right? But, oh, like the Democrats outfoxed us on certain things, right? Or turnout. But there was nobody was like, man, we should be tamping this down. Like, I'm concerned about the fact that in Arizona, in Maricopa County, like 8% of registered Republicans voted for Katie Hobbs. Like that, you would think that would be the place to start, right? How do we get those people back? But you know, I would follow up with that. And it just, you know, there is this kind of mythical, non-voting, working class person out there that they're going to win back, right? It's this sort of idea of, oh no, like we just need to keep fighting this culture war, and DeSantis figured it out, and like some of the other candidates weren't as good, and maybe it was cheating in certain places, et cetera, et cetera. But like we're letting you people go. So, you people being me, which is fine, by the way, that's a mutual divorce. I think that is like the big, you know, takeaway. And I think that it shows just again, like how insulated like their news environment is, right? Like if like those are the big items for them, you know, it really is very separate from kind of like what's happening on the Wall Street Journal.
I mean, speaking of their news environment, like, do you think there's any incentive for Trump, DeSantis, or any of these Republican candidates to do interviews or make media appearances outside the right-wing echo chamber during the primary? Like, are we down to just, we're not going to hear much from them on mainstream news outlets?
There definitely is no incentive to, like, try to engage on the merits. Like, what did Donald Trump get out of the John Swan interview? And John did a great job, right? So not everybody's going to be as good as him, but like nothing, right? Like, I mean, he just got embarrassed and clowned and, you know, just revealed like to be the kind of lying lightweight that he is, right? So the question is, DeSantis has used the Christie model of like yelling at the poor, you know, Tampa News 5 reporter who just like wants to like asks like a reasonable question, right? About like this teacher at a university like had to quit their class, you know, because of your stupid Stop Woke Act, and like, aren't you concerned about that? And he's like, you know, and then he yells at her, right? So there'll be some of that. I think that there's some value in doing that for them. But mostly the main lesson that I like, the main observation I have that I want to pass along is like, they also can really survive just doing interviews in all of these outlets. And there are just so many more than you realize. Like DeSantis did an interview with, and they're propping up in the States with like some, you know, Florida, whatever, you know, Fair and Balanced Florida, right? Like .org. But then you know that like you take the clip from it, you know, you send it to all the trolls that you're paying, you know, on your social media feeds, it gets in their Facebook feeds, right? And so that's like the same, right? So if you're just thinking about this as a consumer, if you are a MAGA hat wearing, Fox watching, you know, resident of Tampa, right? Like, and you see on your Facebook Ron DeSantis doing an interview with some person you don't know who's like, you know, some hack in Florida, right? And he's like, you know, ranting about the issue of the day. That's news for you, right?
Well, I mean, that's DeSantis, news for you. DeSantis doing the interview legitimizes the outlet because it's like, well, right. Ron DeSantis is talking to these people. And then for the outlet, they get Ron DeSantis, you know? Right. So it's a...
Yeah, well, and then for DeSantis, he gets, right, like this, oh, I talked about this. I covered this, you know, like go back and look at whatever, Florida, whatever, today. So, and there are a million of those that have sprouted. And so I don't think that there's a ton of value. And certain issues, you know, there are going to be certain times, and the New York Times did a pretty friendly Ron DeSantis article today, I would say, a little friendlier than maybe I would have done. So, you know, I think that they're right. There may be your strategic moments where you feel like you can engage, but I think for the most part, they're going to pretty much duck media outside of their bubbles.
Chapter 1, Wayfair welcomes you to the neighborhood. Our hero, Titus Burgess, ambled down the stylish street of an enchanting utopia. A woman waved from a chic lounger. "Welcome to the neighborhood," she said, "where Wayfair helps everyone create a home they love." Titus stared in awe. Bohemian Boulevard, Trendsetter Terrace, Mid-Century Circle.
Titus,
You're
reading the Wayfair catalog.
Oh, you'll love Chapter 2. Wayfair's fast and free shipping saves a potluck.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
I mean, so they got their right-wing media channels. They're also going to have their own media channels. You know, Elon invited Trump back to Twitter. Zuck invited him back to Facebook and Instagram. He hasn't taken up either on their offer just yet, though I can't imagine he'll abstain for much longer. How do you think Trump's expected return to both platforms will affect the primary? Is it going to help him, hurt him, neither? Too early to tell.
I think he needs them for the primary. Probably hurts him net and like with general audience and the Republican Party brand. I think it was good for him and the Republican Party brand that he was off Twitter, probably, you know, sending those like insane truths into the ether, like requiring people to like screenshot them. I just didn't have the same effect.
Yeah.
And so in a primary, though, Facebook fundraising, Trump is struggling on fundraising, which is, I think, another sign of his weakness as a frontrunner, which is another parallel to some of the past establishment frontrunners who didn't have that juice anymore to raise the online money. But part of that for Trump is that he can't do the Facebook ads, you know, give me $5 right now to say F you to the, you know, whatever. Right. And so Facebook was a big resource for him for money. So getting back on there at minimum is important for that for him. And yeah, I think that platform wise, you know, he's been a little bit out of the conversation. I mean, Trump's strength has always been dominance, right? I'm dominating the field here. Like I'm everywhere. You can't get away from me. I'm the alpha. I'm starting these conversations. They're responding to me. It's hard to do that on Truth, right? So I think it on net probably helps him, even though maybe medium term isn't great for the party for him to be back on, and obviously it's not good for, you know, our societal fabric.
Well, that goes without saying. Charlie Warzel had this very funny subhead on his piece about Trump coming back to Facebook. He said, at least the platform finally added a user. How much do you think Facebook or Instagram or Twitter will matter in 2024? Like, do you think it matters as much? Do you think their juice is not quite what it was?
I think that they matter. Instagram, certainly. Facebook, who's on Facebook still, right? This is kind of like us hipsters in our media environment always like want to get ahead of like, does talk radio matter? Like, not really, I guess, but like, who listens to talk radio? Old people in the Midwest, right? Like, who are dry, you know, like, who listens to talk radio in Iowa? Well, Republicans are still doing Iowa, right? Like, people that are out on their, you know, combines or doing long drives or, you know, so has Facebook lost its juice? Like, obviously, but the people that are still on there, I think are going to overlap quite a bit with the Republican primary electorate. So I do think that's important. The observation I have, and I don't really have a great answer to this, but I don't hear anybody talking about this, is the TikTok. All of this conversation, you should maybe have a whole offline on this, find somebody that's an expert on this to bring in. So I'm just going to give you my anecdotal. You know, we all,
first of all, I just wanted to start by you did say the TikTok made you sound like a real elder millennial.
Well, I am who I am, John. I'm on it. You know, I've got my FYP. I'm not telling you what's in my FYP. Okay, that's private.
I'm not sharing that with anyone.
Okay, but I'm on it because I want to see what's happening. And you know, it's addictive. It is.
Yeah, it is.
So the people that are talking about concerns about misinformation and like what kind of information are voters getting, you know, going to the primary and manipulation, you know, I feel like everybody's talking about like it's 2016, right? Where we're worried about, you know, Twitter and him getting back on Twitter, him getting back on Facebook. But the black box that is TikTok's algorithm and like the amount of insanity on there and, you know, how, like I said, there can be these influencers at these Turning Point USA things and other Republican things that have no visibility to anybody in the media at all, right? That have 100,000 followers that are just spreading insane nonsense, right? Like everybody focused on the Twitter because it's in front of us, a Twitter conversation around Paul Pelosi, for example, right? Like the Paul Pelosi conspiracies. I went down a TikTok rabbit hole trying to find Paul Pelosi conspiracies and it's madness. And you come across, and every once in a while you'll just flip it and the next thing will come up and it'll be like, this has 200,000 likes. You know, it'll be some guy talking about how Paul Pelosi's gay lover did whatever, right? Or some other thing that's not true. So I don't exactly know what that impact is going to be on the Republican primary, and maybe that's a cycle away because of the demographic of Republicans. But I think that, you know, sometimes we fight the last battle on this stuff.
Yeah, and probably not great that the Chinese government could be fucking with the algorithm themselves. Right. Because that seems like it'd be a good way to screw with American politics.
Yeah,
you know?
It does.
You mentioned the influencers. We referenced this Daily Beast piece a couple times. So they published this piece the other week about DeSantis's people recruiting an army of influencers to amplify all that top-notch DeSantis content out there. Apparently, they're luring them in with offers of money and fake followers. Is this a new thing? And do you think this will be effective?
No, I don't think it's new. Mike Bloomberg did this. Don't think it landed for Mike. So there's always...
It didn't land for
Mike. There is a supply and demand issue always on
all
this.
I forgot about that move in the primary.
Yeah, dude. Come on. Mike Bloomberg did it. I thought it was clever. You know, there's nothing wrong, I guess, in theory, with paying... You know, like, isn't organizing happening on social media, right? If you're going to have a person that's like puts in their feed Team DeSantis and has that. Okay. So the question is the people who are presenting themselves as media, right? You know, the paying people that are deeply problematic in various ways. Like in some ways, they're paying the one guy that's kind of only problematic in a funny way. It was the alpha. I'm blanking his name, Jack. I can picture him. He has like a very soft face, but then he has this huge beard to cover it up. And he's his whole thing is I'm an alpha man. And then he like was into cuckold porn. People found out he liked being cuckolded, and which is, hey, whatever. Yeah. It teaches
filming cuckold porn. Yeah. I was like, what is this story? I haven't heard this guy before. And then I like clicked off the Daily Beast article. I was like, whoa, what's going on here?
Emily's like, what have you been, guess she gets on your browser. What have you been doing there, John? Anyway, so that guy, but then there were some other folks like, oh gosh, I'm having a senior moment. All these people are breaking my brain. But my old friend who always used to troll me on Twitter. Anyway, he had a lot of N-word posts on his social media, like people that were doing a lot of the alt-right, you know, posting on these alt-right message boards, right? So I think there's kind of layers of potential scandal here. I think that it's a decent strategy. I don't know. A lot of campaigns spend money on a lot of stupid shit. So spending money on people that have a following to support you, I think that, you know, in the Bulwark, in JVL's newsletter today, great newsletter, which you confided in me, your daily reader of. It's impossible to write a good daily newsletter. Impossible. And he does it. So I love JVL. His newsletter today is smart. It's like, this isn't really a scandal what DeSantis is doing. It's smart. And if Trump was good, you know, Trump had all these people last time. So Trump didn't give him money. But how did Trump get the Bill Mitchells? You remember Bill Mitchell got the big face, you know, who was always defending him? Okay, great. He was like a key person in the Trump cinematic universe in 2015, right? And no matter what crazy shit Trump did, Bill Mitchell came up with an insane excuse for it. And then he'd get 10,000 retweets. Okay. How did Bill Mitchell, what was the arrangement that was happening there? Well, Trump had Twitter, right? So he was quote tweeting them, retweeting them, helping them, you know, elevating them. Then they'd get big followings, which they could monetize various ways, you know, sell shirts or whatever, you know. And so there was this grift that wasn't like a direct I'm paying you, but it was like, oh, I'm going to elevate all of these voices. That's how, you know, Diamond and Silk get famous, and you could go down the list. And so Trump doesn't seem to be nurturing that community anymore, right? And I think that that does matter, right? Them coming to his defense, nobody wants to go to an empty party. You know what I mean? Like people are attracted to there's a group. We have a team. We're all in this together. And the fact that Trump had insane grifters tweeting defenses of him all the time when all the blue checks were attacking them made people want to come to his side, right? And so maybe Trump didn't do this intentionally. Maybe it was just his lizard brain. But, like, he cultivated this community. And that is withering a little bit. And DeSantis, I think, doesn't have the same, whatever, charisma and platform and all that that Trump does. So they're trying to make it a little artificially. And strategically, I think that's smart.
Yeah, no, I do think that, you know, the Daily Beast piece, sort of the tone of it was like, oh, he's got some second or third or fourth rate influencers that he's gathering up here. But to your point of like all the hundreds of influencers on the right that are out there that we've never heard of, who are taking selfies with at conferences and who have hundreds of thousands of listeners and are rising on the podcast charts, like, you know, you get that community, even if it's a bunch of grifters and lunatics, in the context of a primary, that's some real power. That's some real influence. So, you know, we've been talking about the fact that, like, these Republican candidates are, like, so ensconced in a right-wing media bubble. Like, I was talking to Jane Costin about this when she was on the show, and she was pointing out how Trump's stump speech in 2020 was so much more online than he was in 2016. And that, like, you really had to be a MAGA junkie to even know what he was talking about half the time, and it ended up hurting him. And I do wonder if most of the party now has sort of followed him down this rabbit hole where, and I'm not saying that, like, yeah, we're fine in a general election. I feel I can sleep easy at night. But I do think some of the shit that they obsess over is just not really important to your normie, undecided voter, even, right? Like, do most people give a shit about gas stoves and drag queens and all the stuff that they're freaking out over all the time? I don't know. I don't think so, but...
Yeah, just by just my own accountability here, Jack Murphy is your cuckold friend, and Caleb Hull was the N-word guy. I had to get Caleb Hull's name, the little prick. Okay. I agree. I love this take by Jane. Totally agree with it. And I think that it's a little bit of an inversion. This was always the critique of the left, and I think that at times it still is a fair critique, right? You know, and it's not usually a trigger with left candidates, but more campaigns, right? It's like, who's running the Twitter feed for these candidates? A lot of times it's a super online 27-year-old. God love you, you know, right? And what they care about, you know, is maybe a little bit different than what the median voter, a non-college 50-year-old white person, thinks about, right? And so that created tension for the Democrats. And there was a lot of discourse around this and narrative around this. And is that a problem? And I was always on the side of it was kind of a problem. I think that at times the Democrats hurt themselves unnecessarily just with rhetoric that was like, that made them feel more out of touch as opposed to like their actual, you know, policies. And I think that this is inverted, right? I think that the Democrats have noticed this. There's still examples of this sometimes, of course. No one can be fully in touch with the median voter, and maybe you don't really want to be fully in touch with the median voter at all times. But like, if you look at the Arizona Senate race, this is a short best example of this. Mark Kelly just was out there talking about, hey, man, I'm a guy. I care what I was an astronaut. You know, I'm worried about your concerns. I'm worried about inflation. You know, I'm worried about the border, but I also think we should be compassionate, right? We should make sure people have health care. Yeah. I mean, that was Mark Kelly, just like a dad, an astronaut, talking about stuff that people care about. Then Blake Masters is like, talking about the weirdest shit.
Like that he's going to wear your skin?
Yeah. he's like,
hey, you know who had a good point? The Unabomber.
The Unabomber. It's like, I was reading Curtis Yarvin's blog the other day about the impact of demographic change in the country. And it's just like, dude, like, you're weird. Like, you are weird. The stuff that you care about. And I went to his speeches and it was like, he would attack Kelly for being an astronaut at the start of his speech. Be like, we're sending you back to the moon, and everybody laughing. I'm like, people like astronauts, I think. I don't know. Like, you should have somebody on your team that's like a gut check, that's like a normal person, that's not like deep in, you know, 4chan, right? And so I think that just circling back to when I asked those folks what they care about, vaccine conspiracies, anti-woke, like, you know, whether the African American Studies Department like has a queer class or not, like that's just not at the top of the list of the key voters that you need to win a presidential race.
No one brings that up in the opening question. Right.
And so that is a problem for them, for sure.
So let me just ask you to put your sort of never Trump, but pretend you're a Democrat hat on. If you were running communications and messaging for Joe Biden's nascent reelection campaign, and you didn't yet know who you were facing in the general, Trump, DeSantis, someone else, what would you tell him to do and say over the next year to just get himself prepared and ready to take on the Republican?
I mean, kind of what I just said, but look, I think that Joe Biden needs to occupy the space of, we are trying to actually address your concerns, and these people are weird as fuck. I mean, Joe Biden's not going to say that himself, right? But I mean, that was basically Mark Kelly's campaign against Masters, right? I mean, it wasn't, he didn't say weird as fuck, you know, but his surrogates would. And like the ads made Blake seem as weird as he is, right? It was easy. But Ron DeSantis is weird. I mean, Trump, we already know, right? But like Ron DeSantis is a weird guy. I mean, like he got married at Disney World and, you know, the boots. and it's like the nasally voice and the thing. And he's nobody's like, man, I want to hang out with Ron DeSantis, right? And so obviously there's some extreme policy side of things, but I just think that there is the Republicans have failed. I think that they were maybe on a concerningly right track of saying we want to just carve off some more of the working class, even voters of color. If maybe we can even just carve out 10% more, 8%. Like we don't need to get a majority of the black vote or Hispanic vote, but we're just going to focus on. We're going to say the Democrats are weird. You know, we're not going to get in these like they care about all this culture stuff. We care about you. You know, we wanted to keep things open during COVID, right? Like there was a more of an economic based kind of. There was a little bit of a culture element to it, but not getting into all the very online stuff that might have worked, might not have worked. I don't know. But I thought that it was a concerning possibility. They haven't done that. And in across the country in every place, with the exception of like the handful of normal Republicans like Brian Kemp, they haven't focused on, you know, actually dealing with people's whatever their real concerns are right now, be it inflation or something else. And I just think that Joe Biden can go out there and say, I worked bipartisan. We tried to deal with inflation. We tried to bring jobs back here. We're doing manufacturing. Like, we're on the right track. Things are getting better. They're obsessing over whatever, gas stoves, or whatever their newest thing is, the M&Ms having high heels. And like trying to create that sort of dichotomy is where they should be.
I think that the weird point is very important and underappreciated, because you're right. We talk about it
extreme on
the Democratic side in terms of extremism, right? And I think that obviously works with Democratic voters and people who lean Democratic. And I think that there's a lot of truth to it, that they've embraced very extreme policies and they're extreme candidates, right? But when you think about, Fetterman versus Oz, right?
Yeah.
What was the biggest hit against Oz? That he's just fucking weird.
The crudité.
Right? Doug Mastriano. Extreme, right? Like likes to cosplay as a Confederate soldier. That's very extreme.
And also
it's
weird.
Also weird. Yes. It's also weird. Right? Like Blake Masters. Yeah. Very weird.
Yeah.
Right? Very weird.
Yes.
And I think that sometimes we underappreciate how powerful that is, because most voters are just people who like show up on election day and pick between two people that they haven't really heard that much about. And if they think that one person sounds kind of normal and kind of down to earth and is talking about shit that they care about, they'll vote for that person, especially if the other person sounds like a fucking weirdo.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I mean, obviously you can't make your whole campaign around that, but that would be my North Star, I think, for starting. Yeah. And that also includes, which is much more in the Biden wheelhouse than the weird side, the focusing on, oh, we're doing stuff for you. I think that it shows actually how powerful the weird part is, that the Democrats did well in the midterms, really mostly based on the weird. I don't think that the Democrats did a particularly great job of talking of like the positive story to tell of the Biden administration. Part of that was because it was hard, because the economy was really shaky there. But if the economy keeps getting better in particular, that's a powerful two-pronged message. We're on the right track. They're weird as fuck.
Last question I have to ask as a fellow Twitter addict. How are you handling the Elon era? Are you less addicted, happy, sad? Are you over there on post with the other resistance libs? What's going on?
I'm never leaving. I'll be me and Elon will be the last ones. You can take Twitter out of my cold, dead hands. I am addicted to it. My screen time report is disturbing. I don't like Elon. I think all of his decisions are making Twitter worse. And yet I need the constant feed of information. I have my little nuggets list, you know, I've got my drag race list, all of my interests, you know, I won't list all of my interests, but you know, I've got my LSU list, I've got my politics lists.
Yeah, I found it in the Elon era easier to use by using the lists. That's actually helped it a little bit, because I do think that the overall experience has been degraded, not just by Elon. That was at the beginning, because he's making himself the main character every day. But now it's just like, it feels like the party's emptying out a little bit. But I am like you, as I need the rush of information more than anything. I don't need to tweet a lot. I need to get in Twitter fights. I'm like sort of over all that. But the rush of information,
There isn't a good substitute. So I've maybe tacked down my Twitter usage 10% since Elon has come in, and tried to do some other things. I'm more of a Reddit man now, and I do find sometimes you get interesting little information on Reddit you don't see on Twitter, because it's like the people over there are different. I have started that, but no, I'm going down with the ship, and And I have Twitter wrist and Twitter thumb, which is why you shouldn't have me on this podcast.
I do
like,
too.
I'm literally
my thumb is clicking right now.
I'm gonna be like a 60-year-old man.
I'm right there on the deck of the Titanic with you, Tim.
It's gonna be so embarrassing when I'm like in the senior citizen's home and I can't lift a fork and someone has to feed me and they're like, "Why? What is your?" And I was like, "Twitter thumb. I can't. Like my thumb is broken. Right, the ligaments."
Well, let's start. There was this thing called Twitter. About 30, 40 years ago.
Right.
Tim Mueller, thanks for joining Offline. This was fun.
Thanks, Fabs. We'll see you later.
Offline is a Crooked Media production. It's written and hosted by me, Jon Favreau. It's produced by Austin Fisher. Emma Illich-Frank is our associate producer. Andrew Chadwick is our sound editor. Kyle Seglin, Charlotte Landis, and Vasilis Fotopoulos sound engineered the show. Jordan Katz and Kenny Siegel take care of our music. Thanks to Michael Martinez, Ari Schwartz, Amelia Montooth, and Sandy Gerard for production support. And to our digital team, Elijah Cohn and Nar Melkonian, who film and share our episodes as videos every week.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.